Good morning, one and all. Welcome to Vision in Action Live. We have a presentation on personal profiling today and a guest, Chris Rilling, who's an ocean biologist turned artist. Welcome, Chris. If you don't remember from last podcast, my name is Jim Boswell. I'm your host and the author of Lifelong Fulfillment, Take Charge of Your Life. What we're going to talk about today is who are you really? And this is a critical foundation for starting your life of fulfillment. So we all think we know who we are. And if you're a 20-something, you especially are looking to redefine who you are because you're probably getting educated, doing internships, and beginning to internalize those. One of the things is early on in life, we grow up in environments where we get acculturated. Our beliefs tend to come from other sources, and we sometimes have preconceptions about things. When we do personal profiles, we ask that you suspend these beliefs, acculturation, and preconceptions, so that in fact, the tool that you're speaking to, the profile tool, will really be hearing the real you, your heart, your gut, your brain, not influenced by things that are not based on fact. So we ask you to just think in those terms when you take your test. You want to be brutally honest with yourself in these personality assessments to get the most out of them. Otherwise, they become tainted and then less useful for you as you move forward. So in doing this, the reason we start with personal assessments is because fulfillment really is about reaching a goal. And one of the things is to know where you're starting from. So where we start from is who we are, what we want to achieve, how we want to live life. And so this will get us started with that. Everything we do today, you're going to want to keep copies of and hang on to, because as we talk about other things, you'll be referring back to this material once and again. So we're going to look at five personality tests that we're going to talk about today that you can do as homework. We can't cover it all in depth, but I'll give you other sources to help you get more background. So essentially, we start with Myers-Briggs personality typing. We do values inventory of strengths, and this comes from the positive psychology school of thought. We're going to look at the three dimensions of the good life, and this is kind of a different way of looking at Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And we're going to look at dominance, influence, steadiness, and compliance personality behaviors as that relates to you. And then we're going to do an informal risk tolerance that each of us have and ask you to make an impromptu decision. So a couple of these you'll be deciding today on this podcast. Okay, Myers-Briggs, it's been in effect since 1944. It's a fairly popular personality theory, and it's been in wide use for quite some time. It delivers 16 different personality types with characteristics that go with them, and they're measured across four dimensions. One is, how do you focus your attention and energy? Are you an introvert or are you an extrovert? How do you prefer to take in information? Some of us are more on the sensing side, and some of us have intuition. And how do you prefer to make decisions? Do you do it based on feelings or thinking? And also, how do you prefer to organize your life, either around judging information and perceiving it? Anyway, it looks at all of these, and so 4x4 is a 16 personality thing. All right, if you want further background, which I do suggest you take time to do it, go to TED Talks and look for Who Are You Really? The Puzzle of Personality by Dr. Little. It's entertaining. It's fairly short, but it'll give you a sense of why this is an important test to take. And then you need to take the MBTI test at www.typelogic.com. Now, let me make a comment about these tests in general. When you take tests, you want to make sure that you get copies of the results so that you have those ready at your fingertips. Any descriptive information that goes with that. And you want to create a file and keep that file because you'll be using this information on again and off again through the lifelong fulfillment process. The second one is the Values in Action Inventory. This is a result of Dr. Martin Seligman introducing this concept back around 2000. It takes a different approach using positive psychology that profiles your characteristics over 24 character strengths. And those 24 character strengths are divvied up into the groupings of virtues of courage, humanity, justice, temperance, transcendence, and wisdom. And of course, since Seligman invented this, he's also on TED Talks, and I strongly encourage you to go check there and get his direct view. There'll be a lot more of it than we can offer here today. Take the VIA test yourself at viacharacter.org. And also, by the way, there's a free workbook at the Center of Applied Positive Psychology, excuse me, that you can get if you want to have a more in-depth review of this particular assessment. So now we look at Maslow's hierarchy in a different view. So what we're going to try and decide is right now here today, are you most interested in being happy? Are you most interested in being fulfilled? Or are you interested in taking fulfillment to an extreme in the psychologically risk life? The Maslow's hierarchy, for those of you that may not remember, is a pyramid at the bottom of which is your physiological and safety needs, and the top of which is your fulfillment and self-realization achievements. So the happy life is right about in the middle. It's about the time that you have those things resolved, you have a lifestyle that works, and you're enjoying key features like comfort, joy, and security that drives outcomes of personal satisfaction. So you're happy, and a happy tends to be a human emotional response to the conditions we are living with. The meaningful life is a step above that. That's when you start self-planning and challenging yourself and doing things to control your life and to realize your greatest potential. It has significance to you, it has purpose, and it has coherence and interrelatedness. And it's particularly good at delivering results for the individual, but in many cases, it also contributes to society. The psychologically rich profile is at the very peak of Maslow's hierarchy, and it's punctuated by a lot of interest in variety. A lot of interest in different perspectives. It requires amount of curiosity, time and energy and resources and spontaneity that not all of us have at our fingertips. But it delivers a set of values back to you that include what we think is actually wisdom. So this is a different way of looking at Maslow's. So what you want to do with this particular one is right now here in the podcast, make a decision. What is your personal inclination? Are you personally inclined to live a happy life? Do you think with your understanding of fulfillment that that is your goal? Or does the rich life appeal to you? Write it down, hang on to it. You'll be thinking about it some more. Okay, the DISC is a personality test that came out in 1928. It's the oldest of the ones we're doing and discussing today. It provides 12 different types. It's based on behaviors that we each have in the arenas of dominance, influence, steadiness, and compliance. What it does is helps you look at how you deal with problems, with people, with the pace of life and with procedures. like things about getting done. It looks at your style, again, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, at your preference for a methodical approach to things as opposed to a more freewheeling, fast-paced approach. How you deal with people and the skills that you have there, and how your work style actually is. Again, you can get a lot more details, and this one's on YouTube, TTI Success Insights Wheel of December 2013. It's very informative and offers a lot more depth and detail. Take the DISC test at www.DISCpersonalitytesting.com, and again, get all the information, save it all. You'll be looking at it again. Now we're going to look at personal risk profile. This is fairly simple. So, personal risk is how much risk are you willing to undertake for a certain amount of return or results? In the financial world, you're going to hear this all the time. It's called return on investment. And you'll hear me use that also on a personal level as well as a financial level. So, at the low end, low risk generally gives you lower returns, but there's more assurance that you'll get those returns. As you go to higher risk situations, you can get higher returns, but your risk of not getting it every time goes up. So, somewhere in that spectrum of risk and reward is where your natural inclination lies. So, think of it as low, medium, high, and highest, and make a choice right now. We're going to put you on the spot. Make a choice right now, which that's going to be. Write it down and put it with the rest of your personality profile tests. So, moving on, what we're going to do is sum up about this. So, what you have now is you've got all each of these tests, you've got five. They all look at different parts of your life and your character, and they are cross-correlated so that you get more of a sense of it from multiple authorities. You have a sense of your risk as well. When you look at these and read these descriptions, if they sound like you, well, then that's a good thing. The test is describing what you who you are, how you think, what you want. If there's little discrepancies, yes, those are expected. They don't have to be absolutely perfect. No reason to retake the test. If any one of them is extremely out of line, in those particular instances, we suggest you take the test one more time. But don't do it right away. Clear your head and then take it. Once you have a core of these things that feel right to you, and sound like they represent who and what you are, well, then you actually know what you want out of life. You know how you want to live your life and what's important to you. This is your starting point. This is A, moving to B. Well, B could be your retirement or your career early on, or as a mature adult, some other set of goals. So you will have established that benchmark. So now I want to add one, leave you with one other thing, and that's check out the Point Solution book called Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. It was published back in 2008, and it has three things I want you to understand. The 10,000-hour proficiency rule. That's very important if you're, doing a skill or learning anything, and it talks about how much human practice
Practice.
takes to be perfect. The other one is intelligence quotient. This is the old IQ test. We don't do it here, but if you want to do it, there's plenty of online resources to do that as well and add that to your little kit bag of personality assessments. And then he also talks about parental involvement styles and how those affect the development of young adults. So, with that said, we're done with the formal presentation, and now we're going to move along to our discussion with our guest, Chris Reeling. And this is the time at Envision in Action Live when we talk with self-directed people. Let's visit with our guest today, Chris Reeling. Hi, Chris. How you doing?
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning. Say, Chris, you've recently moved into being an artist, and you had no artist background that I could see at once upon a time. So I'm kind of wondering if you might run us through the last decade or so about, how did you wind up here? What were you thinking? And how's it going?
Well, honestly, Jim, a lot of it has been serendipity. Perhaps not my career, but ending up as an artist was certainly serendipity that I owe to my mother-in-law. But to take you back a few years, I spent most of my career with the Department of Commerce, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, as a biologist, a marine biologist or marine scientist. I have a master's degree in marine science from the University of Maryland, and I spent close to 20 years with NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, both in Silver Spring, Maryland, and then capped off my career in Seattle, Washington, as the division director for the largest fishery observer program in the US. We trained about 450 observers a year to deploy onto commercial fishing vessels in the Bering Sea and the Gulf of Alaska in federal waters to monitor fish stocks that are managed federally. So those include the ground fish stocks like pollock, cod, rockfish species, and that sort of thing. The pollock fishery in Alaska is the biggest fishery in the United States. About 1.2 million metric tons are harvested every year. And the fisheries observers are an integral part of collecting the data that's necessary to manage those fisheries. But in 2018, I retired from NOAA and I spent a little bit of time traveling with my wife. We went overseas to Europe for several months, traveled all over Europe and had a great time. Came back to the US and I took a job as executive director of a nonprofit in Seattle called P Puget Soundkeeper Alliance. I spent about a year with them, and that's when the COVID pandemic hit. And as with a lot of us, my life changed dramatically as a result of the COVID pandemic. My wife and I both moved to Carrizozo, New Mexico, a small rural town in southeastern New Mexico, population about 1,000, largely because that's where my mother-in-law lived. And we had grown to love the town through visits with her over many, many years. And my mother-in-law was the artist. So I'm closing the circle here. She came up with the technique of creating woven copper sculptures about 20, 25 years ago in New Mexico. And she started small, little pieces about 4.5 inches in diameter, weaving little strips of copper, just like you would weave a blanket. And as her experience and expertise with this technique grew, I mean, she truly was an artist, and she was so creative and experimented with different techniques, paints, acrylics, colors, tints, and weaving patterns, and eventually became very well known in New Mexico and actually internationally. She had some very large commissions, one in Bradley International Airport in Hartford, going down one of the new terminals that they had built. These pieces were 20 feet across and 4 feet tall, and she built four of them staggered down the new terminal. And she had a commission in the Alaska Supreme Court room in Anchorage, and that was a seven-piece huge woven sculpture on the back of the room that the justices would be looking at. And so, unfortunately, around this time that we moved to New Mexico to be near my mother-in-law, she was diagnosed with cancer. This was in late 2021. And I think she knew the end was coming, and she and I spent a lot of time working together. She really wanted to impart her knowledge and her trade, if you want to call it that, to both myself and my two sons. So she spent a lot of time coaching us. I essentially apprenticed with her for the last year of her life. And so I not only did she teach me these techniques of weaving copper and painting it and creating these beautiful wall sculptures, she took the additional step to introduce me to the gallery owner in Santa Fe, where she had her work exhibited
Right.
as before she passed away. And she had basically laid out a plan for me. And in some ways, this is why I was saying it was serendipity, that I feel like I've been so blessed in life with people that have helped me along the way.
Oh,
And
okay.
my mother-in-law was certainly that type of person, not just to me, but to all people that she met. She was very giving, very accommodating, just a very lovely person. And so she introduced me to the gallery owner. We explained the situation to him, and she said, "Would you mind if my son-in-law started to make some of these pieces to for you to show in your gallery?" And he also was very accommodating, and he said, "By all means, let's do that." And so I slowly worked my way into producing more and more pieces. Some both while Suzanne and I were working together, and after she passed away, then it sort of transitioned fully to me. And unfortunately, she did pass away in July of 2022. So that's how I became an artist. I don't really think of myself as an artist. I think of myself as a scientist, a marine biologist, a fishery manager. That's what I really spent my career doing. And so this has been somewhat of a transition for me, but one that I feel really comfortable in. And I just feel very fortunate to have been handed this gift by my mother-in-law.
So in a way, you're sort of a accidental reflection of how people get to that retirement age, and some don't have COVID to deal with, or death of parents and so forth to deal with, and some do. And realigning to a retirement career is in itself or kind of a work project. It certainly was in my life. So it sounds like you're on a new path. And it works well, and I've seen your work. It looks beautiful.
Thank you.
That's kind of interesting. I think it's interesting also for folks to see how you take something, difficult times and difficult circumstances, and they become a part of your future, a part of your new direction. Little bit of luck, little bit of planning, and here we are. So let me ask some further questions. One I'm interested in is, did you have a lot of coaches along the way? How did you decide to become this, this biologist? And did you have a plan from day one, or was it a sequence of plans? Maybe you could share some insight on that.
Yeah, I think it's sort of unfolded. So I went to Humboldt State University and majored in marine biology. So I always had an interest in the oceans. I loved studying intertidal ecology and ocean ecosystems and that sort of thing. But my first real job after school, when I couldn't find land a position as a biologist, was to go commercial fishing in Alaska in Prince William Sound. And that was due to my brother. He would had been up there and had fished one year the previous year, and he asked me if I wanted to join him, and of course I said sure. And so that's sort of where my career began, was fishing in Alaska. And I did that for close to 10 years, from 1983 or 4 until 1993. And along the way, if you'll recall, 1989, there was an Exxon Valdez oil spill in Prince William Sound. We were getting ready to go commercial herring fishing in the spring when the oil tanker hit Bly Island and, unleashed 11 million gallons of oil on Prince William Sound, and we were involved in the cleanup and all of that. But the end result of that is that the herring stock in Prince William Sound was decimated. It never recovered. It hasn't to this date. It's never come back. It was one of the most, if not the most profitable fishery in Prince William Sound. So I decided to go back to graduate school in 1993. And that was, in my view, an inflection point, a really important step in my life to sort of change direction. It's not easy to go from commercial fishing to a marine science field. And I think I needed extra training. I needed to come up to speed on the computer age and learning how to use computers and all the analytical tools involved in obtaining a science degree. And so that was a challenging time for me. But really, I think that was sort of what set me on track to become more successful in my career.
I see.
That master's degree in marine science really helped me to take off. And so after I graduated from University of Maryland with that degree, I went to Connecticut, worked with the Connecticut Department of Environmental Protection on a NOAA fellowship for 2 years. Then I was hired by Connecticut DEP as an environmental analyst. And then I applied to NOAA and became an employee for NOAA. And that's really where my career with NOAA took off. So yeah, that's kind of the story there. I mean, yes, there have been a lot of positive influences along the way. My brother was one, bringing me and teaching me how to operate boats in Alaska. I ended up running one of his boats for many, many years. But then going back to graduate school, I certainly had mentors. My major professor, Dr. Edward Hood, University of Maryland, very renowned marine scientist who studied larval ecology in Chesapeake Bay and throughout the world. His specialty was really on tuna species,
Right.
larval stages of tuna species. He sort of took me under his arm and helped me make that transition from being a commercial fisherman to being a marine scientist. That's a pretty dramatic shift. And then from there, just having the fortunate interactions and getting to know people that helped me along my way in my career. I could name countless people that helped me along the way. And so I
Yeah,
don't
we can.
think, success doesn't happen in a vacuum. There are people there that are helping you, are guiding you, are mentoring you. And then in return, I've tried to give back. So during my career at NOAA, I was also a mentor. I helped some of the newer employees coming into NOAA. And then obviously, as a leader in a large organization, you're mentoring people and sort
Right.
of helping them to achieve their career goals.
Right.
So I've been on both sides of that coin. I've been the one searching for that career and then ultimately achieving it, and then trying to help others that are younger in their careers also achieve that same success.
Yeah. Well, we don't do it alone.
That's true. Yeah.
True. We really don't do it alone. Now you mentioned strategic inflection point. So I want to just quiz a little bit on that. We spend a fair amount of time in lifelong fulfillment, trying to get people comfortable with the fact that even if mathematics or business concepts are not your mainstay, that actually they are really good to have those kinds of things in your hip pocket. So we talk about things like diminishing point of returns, strategic inflection points, the Pareto rule by far. And so I kind of wonder, have you ever run into those as well, being the scientist that you are?
Not really, no. I mean, I was reading your book was an eye-opener for me because it really provides a more analytical pathway towards, as you're saying, lifelong fulfillment than I had ever been exposed to.
Right.
Not to say I haven't had plenty of training along the way, especially at NOAA. They're very focused on developing their employees, much as you describe in your book, ha having had training at the places you worked, AMD and elsewhere. Leadership training, technical training. I guess I was lucky in that I was fortunate that I had a background in geographic information systems that I picked up while a fellow in Connecticut. And that was a tool that was really coming into play at NOAA in the late 90s. And I having that skill, I think, really opened up doors for me from a technical perspective. So that
Right.
kind of got me in the door. But from there, as you can see looking at my resume, I took a lot of training. Every training opportunity that came along at NOAA, I would jump on, including being recruited for the Executive Leadership Development Program in around 2009.
Yeah.
These things don't just fall on your plate. You do have to pursue them.
Right.
You have to look for those opportunities. If you just go to your desk and sit there all day, you're never going to advance.
Right.
You need to have your eyes open, you need to take initiative, and you need to be willing to get out of your comfort zone. This is something I often coach people about is if you're feeling extremely comfortable in your job, you should probably challenge yourself. Look outside of what's within your field of vision and see if there's something else that might be that might be something that you could look forward to. I think a lot of people kind of get in a rut of doing the same job and they don't know how to get out of it. And when I say I had a career at NOAA, that spanned multiple positions. I wasn't just in one position, sort of working my way up within that division.
Right.
I moved from the National Ocean Service to the National Marine Fisheries Service, all within NOAA. And then within the National Marine Fisheries Service, I actually held like four different positions over 10 to 15 years. So I was always looking for the opportunities for advancement. And the only way to do that is to keep training, keep increasing your knowledge, keep increasing your skills. Don't be sedentary. Keep your eyes open for those opportunities to move forward.
Well, thank you, Chris. That's a great overview and really insightful comments. I'm sure our audience will appreciate everything you've said here. Well, this
Thank you.
kind of brings our session to a close. Thank you so much for attending and being a guest on our show. And we wish you all the best of luck on the art side.
Thank you, Jim. And I just want to put a plug in for your book. I think it's a great tool. I kind of wish I'd seen something like that earlier in my career, because what I really appreciate about it is the depth of the information and knowledge that's presented there, and also the more analytical approach towards looking at yourself, your personal predispositions, your personality type. By the way, I have done Myers-Briggs tests. That's
Oh,
something
good.
really focused on. And it's very helpful to know what personality am I and what are the types of personalities that I'm interacting with on my team or within my workplace. But
Right.
anyway, lifelong fulfillment really provides that pathway to fulfilling your life's dreams and becoming a happy person and having a fulfilling life. So thank you for sharing that book, and I think people will get a lot out of it.
It's been a pleasure, Chris. Maybe we'll have you back again.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Chris, for joining us today. Your perspectives are very interesting. Vision in Action Live podcasts are announced in advance, normally every 2 weeks. We thank you for tuning in to Vision in Action Live today, and we hope it met your expectations. Check out the book, Lifelong Fulfillment, Collateral Material, and this podcast on www.lifelongfulfillment.com. Thanks so much for joining us today. We hope to see you again soon.